Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome back to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
So while you were away, we got a chance to go to kind of like a board. It was kind of a convention.
Really? You guys organized it, didn't you?
No.
We did.
Matt did. Oh, okay.
So it was down in Takatsuki, which is, as I said, a lot closer than where we had to go to get to your place.
Riveting, Wayne.
Well, then jump in and help me, goddammit.
For you listeners out there, I live far away from Takatsuki. Put things in perspective.
I'm not sure if it tops the fact that it was in Takatsuki, but we actually got to play some new games over there.
It doesn't top.
So we had the new games that we played that I don't think you've played are Barbarossa, Elfinland, and
Small World.
Small World. Yeah.
I'd heard of Barbarossa before. It was at the last convention I went to, but the other two were brand new to me.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you saw the box. So we got to play that. So that was what we call those, a deck-building game?
Yeah, I would call it a deck-building game.
Like in the... I thought it was very similar to Thunderstone, but also in the same vein as Dominion.
Okay, cool, cool. Better or worse?
I thought it was the best of the three.
Nice.
But then again, I'm a fan of World War II history and the Barbarossa campaign in particular. Yeah, so for those that don't know, that it is based on the Barbarossa campaign where the Germans invaded Russia. Hmm. And basically you need to... Your objective is to take these different Russian cities or Soviet cities.
Yeah, I tried explaining it to some guys at work the other day, and it just didn't go over that well. Yeah, you play the Nazis, and you're burning down Russian villages, and yeah, it just didn't, yeah.
You don't necessarily have to burn them down.
You just take them.
Cruelty you add to the game is...
Obviously, Chris adds a lot.
That's the expansion stuff.
No, I thought the...
And I'm putting these people in the work.
Oh, jeez. I thought the... of the three deck-building games we've played, Barbarossa, Dominion, and Thunderstone, I think Barbarossa had the best, the theme and the mechanics, I think, were integrated the best of the three.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you had some issues with Thunderstone, wondering, it seemed kind of tacked on, or something like that, when they're going into the dungeon.
The light thing was tacked on.
It's not so much the light. The mechanics... didn't seem to fit the theme as well as they could have, and that there was a few occasions in Thunderstone where I was kind of at a loss for what to do because there's automatic limits on which actions you can take, specifically when it goes to fight monsters, and if you don't have the right equipment or the right power, then it's kind of just, all right, I'll just go shopping, and which of course is a way to build up that power level, but...
Well, I guess a couple changes. One in... Barbarossa, you have the actual named cities. You know, you have Stalingrad and Moscow.
That's cool.
Isn't Moscow the last one?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so it's kind of like a chain you're building up to.
Yeah, like okay. Moscow always goes...
The other ones are
and the other ones are
random.
Okay. So just like an end game trigger.
Okay.
But in addition to that, you can also attack encampments or high ground. And then you can also basically seize the high ground or seize the encampments. So then you could conceivably then... use those to attack a city.
I see.
Right, you kind of get a bonus, which I liked a lot. It kind of felt like, yeah, you could just try and take the city outright, or you could kind of build up, kind of essentially get your troops into a better position during a couple of turns.
I see.
And then have an easier chance of taking the city. So I thought that was very thematic and a good mechanical kind of...
But do you have the option of just kind of like blitzkrieg?
Oh, yeah, you don't have to take it. It's like, I'm going to take this
that's
turn.
That's a good use of words.
Yeah, well,
cool.
The
thank you. I'm awesome. Yep.
You said it.
Yeah, you can also buy personality cards.
Yeah,
oh, cool.
You can buy Hitler. You can buy
there's a Hitler Man's card.
Team. There's a Hitler card.
It's awesome.
And again, that's random.
And different generals and field marshals.
Cool. Very cool.
I was going to say the
we should say that we played the limited edition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. And the limited edition uses actual photographs.
Oh, cool.
From World War II photographs. Whereas the unlimited or the regular edition uses like manga style or anime style drawings of women in
German uniforms.
Wow.
In various states of undress.
Yeah, German panties.
Ill-fitting German uniforms, I imagine.
No, they're actually not ill-fitting. They're actually quite tight.
That's what he meant.
Yeah. Oh, all right. To me, ill-fitting means like loose and baggy.
That overcoat is way too large for that hot chick.
Actually, it wouldn't have been so bad if that's what they were wearing. But
show a little more chest.
No, actually, that's overcoat. How is that an overcoat? It barely covers your waist.
It's a waistcoat.
But we also played the Japanese edition. Currently, that's the only language it's available in.
Isn't it a Japanese game?
It's made by a Japanese
company. We played the only edition.
Yeah. Yeah, we played the only edition, which happened to be Japanese. And, like, unlike Thunderstone or Dominion, this one was a little harder to wrap my head around because it was in Japanese.
But we played Dominion and Thunderstone.
Well, what I mean is, like, there were a lot of one-off cards. Mm-hmm. In this version,
like the personalities
are one off, the cities are one off. So, you know, after you play,
you also have little events, but those weren't one offs.
Yeah,
like, there seemed to be repetition of the events.
So, like, after
when you take
a
city,
for,
you would draw also from the event deck
okay.
to see what happens. So it could be like winter, or the Luftwaffe could come in to help you out, so it could actually give you a bonus.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool!
So it's a kind of every time you attack a city, there's a random element.
Yeah, I liked that. But it made it a little bit difficult to play the game, only because, like, when you're doing it in another language, generally you match up the picture. And when it's a new picture on the card, you're like, well, what does that do? I don't remember.
So each card had a different picture?
No, what I mean is, like Lyle said, the general cards each had a different one. Mm-hmm. Like, the cities each had a different picture.
I see.
The one-off cards. So the main cards, you could kind of remember what they did.
Mm-hmm.
But certain, like, important cards... it was kind of, we had to rely on Matt to translate for him, he did a great job, but then you don't want to interrupt someone else's turn and say, what does that do again? I don't remember this one. So it's a little more difficult than Thunderstone or Dominion.
I see. But didn't have the translation sheet in front of you, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I see. Okay.
Probably would be the most useful to study Japanese, that one, as opposed to Dominion. You learn a lot of German technical words, maybe.
I suppose they're...
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, hard to say.
You're going with a theme that's 50 years old instead of 1,000 or non-existent. Yeah, so.
Yeah. Yeah, just because there's a lot of military words.
I see.
So the cards would be, you know, oh, that's the command center, or the, you know, this particular type of tank.
In Japanese, it's Panzer.
Yeah.
Panzer right. Tank.
I wonder what we would call that in English. Sensha, I know that word. Tank.
All right.
It means war car.
War car. Makes sense.
And the other games.
The other game we played was Elfinland.
Yeah, that was a Ryan recommendation.
Yeah.
And it was kind of funny because he pulls out this board game that looks like Candyland Deluxe.
Well, we had finished Barbarossa, right? We had finished playing the Germans taking Russian cities. Everybody's kind of done. Yeah, and then Ryan pulls out this game that has... what on the cover? Like a cartoon kind of looking elf and
cartoon
like a
elf
dragon?
And a cartoon elf land.
Yeah, elf land. Right.
Yeah, I think he was riding a dragon. Didn't help. Like riding on a little cartoon dragon. It's like Puffed Magic Dragon or something.
Oh, that's so adorable.
If anybody knows, like, is familiar with like the Ravensburger games, such as like Labyrinth and those other games, that's kind of what it looked like.
I'm not, but okay.
Oh, all right, anyway.
So, like, what? So everybody's just kind of like avoiding eye contact. Wayne's like looking at his hands. He's sitting at the table.
It's kind of like when you go out to the club and you're dancing with old guys all night, and then one guy says, "You know, I'm gay." And everyone's like, "Oh, yeah."
I guess kind of like
or
that.
Or not like that at all.
It's more like he pulled out a gun. Because Matt and this other guy kind of back away, like, "Oh,
whoa, whoa, take it easy."
Yeah, take it easy, man.
Put it away. We don't want to get hurt.
Yeah.
And one guy quickly said, "Oh, I want to play something where you kill things." And then Matt just like. Grabbed onto that like a life boy. Yeah, me too. I'm not done killing things.
Yeah.
And then Ryan starts to explain it, but he's like, "Oh, it's like your elves that have come of age," and you're like, "Oh, not helping. And yeah, it turned out to be a fantastic game.
Yeah.
So really what Ryan should just do when he has a game recommendation is just set up the game and just say, "We're playing this game."
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't ask. Just
because it's like Formula Days. Like, "Oh, you guys want to play a game?" I'm like, "Sure." And then he pulls out this game that looks like a racing hungry hippie hippos.
Yeah, yeah.
Hungry hippies.
You didn't play that? Give him more brownies. Give him more brownies.
I was thinking. Yeah.
I think we have a winner here.
Yeah, yeah. Trademark. That game is not trademark. It's mine.
But you play real slow.
Dude, why can't we just share the food, man?
Dude.
Don't smash down.
Let's get back on topic.
But Elfinland, it's just basically the... it's called the Salesman Dilemma, where basically you want to get to as many...
I think there's 12 cities on the board, each with kind of like a different map. Sorry to cut you off.
You and can you take that. The high ground to...
No, you don't. There's no high ground, but there are mountains. But basically, you go around collecting tokens from each city.
Cool.
Right. No one needed to know what the Salesman Dilemma was.
All right!
I was in like a mid-definition there.
All right. Dude,
what does a Salesman's Dilemma mean? I am unfamiliar with that term.
Basically, you want to get... I'll take it.
Because, funny, I actually don't know what it means, so I am curious.
It's basically how to go on your sales route in the most efficient way as possible.
I see.
So if you're like, maybe it's called the Traveling Salesman Dilemma. So you travel to different areas, and what's the best way to take it, or take. And that's what it is. And you have different modes of transportation, such as dragon, elf cart, troll.
Don't forget the unicorn.
And then you have different terrain.
Okay.
And some are better than others at traveling over the terrain.
I see. Dragons can fly. Elf carts can...
Roll.
Roll.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
And I guess trolls carry you. I don't know.
As opposed to the unicorn who also carries you?
Well, I guess you ride on a unicorn, but maybe a troll carries you in his arms.
I guess. Maybe it's one of those games where you just ignore the theme entirely.
But basically, you lay down these tiles, and I guess they would represent the mode of transportation you're using on this particular road.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also share transportation, because you also then have a hand of cards.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a unicorn card, or... one or two unicorn cards, depending on what terrain you're going on, that will determine whether or not you can travel or use this particular mode of transportation.
Right. Okay.
So it can get really tense. It is both cooperative, competitive, very simple rule set. It's we often talk about, you know, what would be good games to play with somebody where English is their second or third language, and this would be perfect.
Also sounds like something good to play with a wife.
Yeah.
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 Now, I said before, there's no in-game text at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, each card has kind of like a visual key of how many of this ticket you used or you need to cross certain terrain.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have a little separate card that has like a chart.
Hmm.
So I thought it was really, really good. Like, you don't...
Well designed?
Yeah, like, you don't need to read to play it, so like kids could play it as well.
Nice.
Yeah, I thought it was... theme aside and pictures aside, I thought it was actually really good.
Nice, nice.
So,
I ended up buying Barbarossa just so I get, because of the limited edition. Once it's gone, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have gotten Elfinland, but it was just a bit hard to get sent here.
Oh, yeah.
So
cool. And what was the third one you guys played?
Small World.
Okay.
Which is kind of like a conquest game a little bit, a little bit like Risk, and that you have a map with different territories representing different terrain, and you choose. Everybody chooses a race and kind of like special power combination.
Mm-hmm.
They have these stacks of race cards and these stacks of kind of like ability cards, and they get shuffled up at the beginning of every game and paired together.
Okay.
So that every game it's a kind of random race and ability pairing.
Okay.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. It increases the replay value in that it'll be different every single time you play.
Okay.
And basically it's all just about... sort of capturing territory and earning victory points, but there's very little kind of combat or dice rolling in it, unlike Risk.
Okay.
So.
Good?
No, I thought it was good. I had been wanting to play it for a while, just because, you know, I like modular things, and the race ability combination seems pretty interesting.
Is it like a sci-fi kind of theme with different races?
No, it's fantasy.
Okay.
Kind of. So in other words, you have like, you know, elves, dwarves, ratmen, orcs, goblins, all that kind of stuff.
Rock and roll.
So... the illustrations are kind of comical, which I didn't mind. They're kind of like cartoony, but I don't think you liked that all that much, Lyle. Or it didn't really matter.
Hmm.
Didn't sell the
Small
game.
World?
Yeah, like kind of like the cartoony illustrations.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that. I guess when I play a conquest game, you know, I want a little blood on the box. And that didn't have it. But it was a lot of fun. The thing I thought was really fun about it was basically, yeah, you can change your race. You basically, I forget what the term they use in game, but you basically kind of put one in decline. And then grab your...
Term.
Oh, well. Yeah. And then you grab another race, and that's your kind of ascendant race, or your active race.
Okay.
It's pretty simple. There's a... It was kind of fun, the tactics, and it's very, very combative.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I enjoyed the game. I just so happened to played it on the same day as Barbarossa and Alphaland, and I really enjoyed those games.
So kind of got outshone by those.
Yeah, and I knew that Wayne was going to buy Small World. It's one of those things. Right, so you play it and you go, oh, this is definitely a Wayne game.
Yeah. Cool, very cool.
Didn't realize there was definitely Wayne games.
Wayne game.
So, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, what is? I'm trying to link Small World to Hard Boiled, but I can't.
Yeah, you can.
Maybe we should have started with that. No, none of them would have worked.
Not war at all.
Elfinland.
Elfinland.
But
gritty elves.
Yeah. Even though it looked like Candyland, boy, that was one hard boiled game. Actually, no, there's no link. Well, today we're going to talk about Hard Boiled, or which is kind of like the novel equivalent of film noir.
Mm-hmm.
So we played a little mini campaign, Hard Boiled campaign, set in the early 60s, America, in Los Angeles. And we decided to do experiment with a few things, so that's what we're going to talk about, both playing a Hard Boiled game, but mostly we're going to talk about our three experiments.
Yeah, and this was kind of part of that, the mini-game experiment that we did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was picked up American Tabloid by James Ellroy. James Ellroy, probably his most famous book is L.A. Confidential, mm-hmm. and that's the movie's based off of that. And that's a great series of books, the Dudley Smith series.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a new trilogy, or a newish trilogy called the Underworld USA Trilogy. Mm-hmm. And that started with American Tabloid, and of course the two other books that follow.
Yeah.
And that's set in the late 50s, early 60s. It goes in mostly in the early 60s. And I'm reading it, and I'm thinking, this is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I wanted to do more with narrative, mm-hmm. less with pictures and that, and just how to basically make a game, you know. And I've heard that hard-boiled is a tough type of game to run,
mm-hmm.
so you know, kind of the challenge was there, so that's what we did.
Cool. Yeah, you mentioned that in what was it, a couple weeks back, we did props. You said that you felt you were too reliant on pictures, so
yeah. So I wanted to do more with that, and just reading, I really like James Ellroy's writing style, and I wondered, and I thought, like, you know, film noir is dependent on certain cinematic things, and you'd probably be a better person to comment on that, Chris, mm-hmm. since you studied it. But when you read like a kind of those pulp, hard-boiled detective novels, they make a lot of use with, like, you know, like Chandler and that, like how they say it as much as, you know, what they're actually talking about, how they set the scene, like what kind of words. And James Ellroy is no exception.
Yeah, it's weird. Like when you first mentioned that, the first thing I thought of course, was film noir. But, you know, since I studied more, like, the cinematography of it, for me, film noir is primarily a visual kind of thing. And, I haven't read hard-boiled books, so I was really thinking, like, if you're going to go without pictures, how the heck are you going to do that? But it was good.
Yeah, and I did watch some film noir in preparation, Double Indemnity and Maltese Falcon, mm-hmm. The Big Sleep.
But I think you said Put You to Sleep.
I love The Big Sleep.
Yeah,
what can I say? But that's for another issue.
I would say The Big Sleep was the lesser of the three.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Double Indemnity was the best. Then Maltese Falcon, then The Big Sleep. But honestly, I preferred L.A. Confidential, both the movie and the book over.
Did you watch Brick?
Yes, I did watch Brick.
Love that movie.
Yeah, that's good as well. Yeah, but mostly mine was Hard Boiled as interpreted by James Ellroy.
Mm-hmm.
So everything I would consider hard-boiled is mostly... I'm a fan of his as opposed to necessarily the hard-boiled genre.
And, you know, actually, I think that's a good choice because as a literature, it comes across with, like, the language and the way people are saying it. Mm. Playing NPCs, that's a great thing to draw from.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, good way to go with that.
So the basic premise of the game was that you guys were going to be people that... You have to be set in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have some connection to the mob, and you have to be kind of flawed. You have to have one flaw, whether it's a tarnished angel or whatever. Mm-hmm. And again, as interpreted by James Ellroy, and this maybe is indicative in the entire hard-boiled genre, is basically everybody, there are no, like, people in white hats. Mm-hmm. Everybody's kind of gray or black. Mm-hmm. So even your heroes, I guess the Sam Spade characters and that, I guess they're kind of gray characters. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not doing things necessarily with the goodness of their heart. They might make good decisions. Mm. Or as Elroy puts it, it's not like the heroes are immoral. They're moral people, mm-hmm. but they're not necessarily good people. Mm-hmm. So Wayne, what was your character? You gonna introduce him?
Yeah, my character kind of took a page from L.A. Confidential and kind of went with the homosexual actor.
Yep.
So.
Which I was so jealous of, because that's such a better concept than my character.
All right. So, what was yours?
Okay, my guy was, his name was Bernie. he was like a tabloid reporter. I pretty much ganked him directly out of L.A. Confidential as well, the Danny DeVito character. But just his flaw is that he was a total sleazebag. You know, he'd do anything for money and influence and whatnot. Yeah, his because, Lyle, you mentioned before starting the game that it was going to be very colored, as in, like, race and religion and all that kind of stuff matters a lot.
Yeah.
And so I made him a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Just to see where that would go.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so...
We should say that your character, Wayne, was a closeted homosexual actor.
Yeah, sorry. I should have brought that up.
Kind of like a Rock Hudson.
Yeah, because we were discussing before about whether they were kind of like action movie stars back then, and they weren't really, but...
It's more a tough guy actor.
Yeah, it's more like a tough guy actor. And as you said, you had to have... Or your characters had to have some kind of connection to the mob. And my character was... Italian American, and his kind of like famous role was he played like a mobster in a movie that apparently everybody, including the mob, liked. So that was kind of his.
Your actor was starred in Made Man, which was a big hit, especially with the Italian American and the organized crime community.
Right. Oh yeah.
So you're a bit of an idol. I guess you'd be more like. As if Robert Mitchum or Humphrey Bogart were closeted.
Yeah.
That would be more... Oh, my leg! It's killing me.
Tight quarters here. Like, I was trying to, like, shift position quietly. Didn't work.
Sorry.
Stick it out straight or something?
Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
We're recording in yet another new location. It's, yeah. It's got good sound, but it's the smallest one yet.
Yeah, sorry.
And I'm a giant.
Sounds much louder than everyone else.
Maybe that's it. But. All right. Yeah, so as Chris was alluding to, we're trying to figure out, okay, what's going to capture Hard-Boiled and really really bring us into that kind of period and that kind of world. And one of the things we hit upon, yeah, is pretty much, of course, there's a, you know, it's the early 60s, so there's a, you know, kind of a different standard, a different way of speaking. So we decided then we would be using the slang of the early 60s, including the slurs of the early 60s. So those people who have read a James Ellroy book will find that the language is, yeah, you know, to use a euphemism, I guess.
Offensive by today's standards.
Oh, God, yeah.
I was going to say colorful. All right. Yeah. But probably accurate.
Mm.
And that's the way people would speak to each other. Mm-hmm. And if you are going to be Jewish, then that's probably, you're probably going to get a nickname like Bernie the Jew.
Yeah.
Mm. Or that's how they would refer to somebody. They wouldn't go, oh, Bernie the, oh, he's not so tall. You know, does he look, no.
Yeah, I think Bernie the Jew was probably the nicest one that we heard, but.
Yeah. Yeah, and there wouldn't be like, what was your character's name, Wayne? I can't. But it wouldn't be like somebody would say, such and such, the gay actor. Not that there's anything wrong with him being gay. You know? No, this is a time where that's a big deal.
Yeah, they would drop a few F-bombs before and after the gay part.
So there was a big disclaimer for anybody who was going to play. Mm. It's we were kind of going to not only like explore the hard-boiled genre, but we're also exploring the use of slurs and prejudice and be pretty unflinching in how that's presented.
And not for its own sake, just to reiterate, because we'd be part of the era and hard-boiled.
Well, that was part of it, though, wasn't it?
It was kind of both. It was kind of pushing the envelope, but this happened to be where it would fit quite well into the world. But it's not like, yeah, then we're going to plan a fantasy game.
We're dropping F-bombs left, right.
Yeah, slur.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm curious. When we did the vampire game before, we got into some pretty heavy sexual situations as Wayne's character was trying to grab some girls. I think we talked about, like, how far is too far, and was this kind of going along with that, trying to see how far you could go? Especially in the sexual scenes.
Well, in the sexual scenes, there was some envelope pushing in... Oops, sorry, I think I just knocked the table.
And the wall. Again, Lyle's huge.
Sorry, I just flexed.
Put down the car!
Yeah, I think in Vampire we kind of pushed what the comfort levels on how sexuality or how sexual situations are, how graphically we betray them, portray them.
Yes.
And here we wanted to do because, like, Wayne had a bisexual character in Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
But then... Is he bisexual because he's a vampire? Because it's just a different type of sexuality. I mean, I don't want to get too much into Vampire.
Yeah.
But it's not like people are going to say, oh, yeah, effing whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because he fed from a man, because it's just a different type of norm. Mm-hmm. And I actually was considering this one character was going to have kind of like a homophobic attitude, but it just never came up.
Mm-hmm.
But here it was definitely going to come up, and perhaps a little bit forced, but just saying, look, a lot of these characters are going to be racist, these NPCs. So, yeah, by all means, play the closeted gay actor. By all means, play the Jewish journalist.
That
was a really interesting idea.
But it's going to come up. And you're going to, if you want to play an African-American, you're playing an African-American in the early 60s. It's not like you're an African-American cop. No one's going to comment on that.
Right.
They're going to comment on that. You are going to be... Hey, if your name is Jim, you'll be Black Jim or something like that.
Yeah.
It becomes a part of who you are.
And that's one of the reasons that I chose to play a Jewish character, because if we're going to be doing that, why not? Did that have with you? Was that the reason you also chose a gay guy?
No, it was mostly because, as Lyle said, there has to be something blackmailable about your character.
Okay.
Or there has to be something kind of that would be considered, I don't know, not wrong, but yeah, there has to be some way for him to get his sort of hooks into you, and that's the first thing that kind of popped into my head, especially after watching LA Confidential.
There was LA. Yeah, it was kind of. That seems to be pretty standard in film noir and hardboiled.
I think you also said that. So I'm like,
the characters just kind of are just grabbed and they're put into the situation, and they're just kind of shot out. You know, it's like they're thrown onto the train on that railroad.
Yeah,
and they're shot out, and then they're kind of stuck until they can figure out a way out, or they're just stuck. And then you just ride it out to the end. I wanted to figure out how to get you on that train. The metaphorical train.
Yeah.
People are going, oh,
came on a train? Lots of trains.
But anyway, so back to kind of the colorful language. And we said the only word that's banned from my end was going to be the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't use that. But all other slurs, including other slurs for African Americans... Mm-hmm. are on the table unless you raise your objections now.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you did that before the game.
Before the game started, and nobody raised any objectives. Objections.
Mm-hmm.
So we just let those slurs fly.
But no, we really didn't.
Yeah, no, we didn't, actually.
As the game master, you did with the NPCs, and quite rightly so, but it was weird how restrained you and I were when...
I think it was just because... Maybe I kind of mentioned after the session, it just kind of certain words just wouldn't come out.
I
forced it. Like, and I should say that I had written late 50s and early 60s slang,
right?
And then I also divided it by, like, here's the general slang, and then here's the slurs divided by particular groups.
Mm-hmm.
And you found that African Americans. Number one with a bullet on the slurs, with maybe homosexuals number two, and then Jewish. There weren't a lot of Jewish slurs that I could find.
Yeah.
So yeah, for you, I was just kind of alternating between two different words.
But it was weird. Like I when you sent that out and said, let me know now if there's any words that you want to just keep away from the game.
Yeah.
And I said, no, because I really don't like that whole PC philosophy. So I think, yeah, anything should be fine, I thought. But when we were actually playing the game, and I think I was going to throw out some insults to your character, Wayne. And, like, it was, yeah, it felt horrible.
Yeah, well, I think, like, neither you nor I, Chris, made particularly racist characters.
Oh, no, my guy, so, my guy was a little sleazebag.
Well, yes, well, there's a I think there's a difference between being a sleazebag and being a racist.
Yeah.
But, like... But yeah, because when we were having an, when our characters were having a, an argument, maybe there isn't, I don't know.
That guy's the nicest racist I've ever met.
Yeah, you know what? He's a racist, but he's a stand-up guy. Whereas opposed to, man, that guy's a sleazebag. But
equal opportunity for you.
Sleazebag, yeah. Anyway, back on track. But yeah, when our characters got into an argument, Chris, I was thinking of, like, I don't know, using a couple, you know, slurs, and they wouldn't really come out.
Yeah.
I mean, and not, again, not because my character was racist, but because that's kind of what people at the time would say in conversation, and even those things.
Yeah. I don't want to be too more relativist, but some people who, they certainly wouldn't view themselves as racist, but they might.
They were, or may have been.
Right, but they would drop, they would drop words that we certainly wouldn't drop nowadays. Or if you, or would use a word when they were angry at somebody who happened to be Jewish or happened to be African-American or gay, and they would just kind of use that word against them just because they're angry at that person, not that they're angry at the race or the orientation. And that.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I was forced myself to say the things because I knew what your characters were. So then I would go, all right, so they're going to use these... I went through the slurs and I said, okay, definitely going to use this against Wayne's character and this one and this one and this one. Unfortunately, with your character, Chris, I was like, yeah, definitely going to use that word and the other word. And I'll just alternate between those two.
We'll just hit him a lot more.
Well, I guess part of the problem with a Jewish person is Jew can be fine to say, or it cannot be fine to say. It's all in the intonation. Yeah. So you're kind of like throwing it with a
couple of expletives around it.
Yeah, with the, I guess, racist intonation, you know, if there's such a thing. anti-Semitic intonation. It's like, yeah, but I'm calling
Don't you
Jewish
use an anti-Semitic
in a
tone
bad
with me.
Way.
Yeah.
Right on. So anyway, yeah, that was a really interesting part of it.
It was hard.
It was. Much more so than I expected.
Yeah.
And I think more so than any of the other reasons or any of the other experiments that we use in the game, that was, the first one was one of the reasons why we made it kind of like a really fixed number of sessions, in that we didn't want to necessarily like latch onto like a 6-month campaign, hard-boiled campaign, where we're like, where it might become a chore and it's like, oh, it's Sunday, now I gotta go call.
I gotta go for some anti-Semitic names.
Yeah, I gotta brush up on my homophobia.
Like, let me put on my thick skin because there's gonna be some slurs flying at me. All right.
And you know, actually, it's something to go out as advice to anybody who would want to try something similar to this. Like, both Wayne and I were taken aback by how it actually did affect us, even though going into it we didn't think that it would as much. So if you do something like this, please be really careful with your players because they might not even realize how
how
it might affect them.
Maybe plan like a one-off or a couple session story so they can kind of try it out. Because it is kind of not bad, but it can be a bit of a downer or a letdown if you kind of have to do an abrupt change of tone in the story. Because then the story might actually suffer. And whereas people suddenly feel more comfortable, oh, now I'm no longer hurling slurs across the table.
Yeah.
But then they're also, but I'm not... I didn't think, now I'm not as engaged in the story anymore. Yeah. I'm not transported to the early 60s USA.
Or worse, your story just doesn't make sense if it was something about like racist cops or something like that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, the closet, why are you in the closet? Because, I think gays should be married. I think they should have that right in the early 60s. And you rewrite history and suddenly it's my Jewish friend Bernie. why do I even say he's Jewish? Because that, it doesn't matter. My friend Bernie. Bernard. Yeah. So, so definitely that would be good advice is, make sure your players are okay. And a really short story to start off as a tester. Because if you take it out, you might actually take out a lot of the flavor.
And then you might actually find some of your players who are too much okay with it.
Why are those words off the table? I mean, come on, let's do them.
The game's over. You can stop now.
Yeah. Could you be like an African American elf? Because I've got some words here.
There's so many left on the list.
Yeah, can we play this game again? But could somebody be Hispanic?
Yeah, right.
Is that all right?
Wow.
Yeah. So what else did you do?
So the other thing is, I guess we'll continue with the actual word, like the verbalness, is mm-hmm. that James Elroy is a master. I would recommend his books without reservation. Well, I guess you're easily offended by slurs. Maybe there is some reservations.
Yeah.
But he is truly one of those writers that is just a master of the written word.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to basically take that hard-boiled, as interpreted by James Elroy, that hard-boiled style, and make it part of the narrative. So instead of, like, a guy walks in, you kind of use the narrative that James Elroy did.
And I have a quote.
Yeah, and rather than trying to, like, because sometimes my narrative did have slurs incorporated and try to force myself to use them. But, for example, he would write, this is at the beginning of American Tabloid. Howard Hughes found a vein in mainlined codeine. Pete watched on the sly. Hughes left his bedroom drawer ajar. The dope hit home. Big Howard went slack-faced. Room service cards clattered outside. Hughes wiped off his spike and flipped channels. The Howdy Doody Show replaced the news. Standard Beverly Hills hotel business. So just kind of like the really short sentences. I guess they call it kind of a telegraphic style.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And just like real tight, almost like a machine gun, throwing out those sentences at you,
mm-hmm.
using a lot of slang that people, late 50s, early 60s slang. So I use that incorporated that as part of the narrative. And I did incorporate some slurs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the first thing I did, yeah, I used slurs for homosexuals because it was kind of introducing your character, Chris, to Wayne's mm-hmm. gay actor.
Yeah.
So I used some of that. I'll use one because it was used in LA Confidential, but you know when the Kevin Spacey character,
mm-hmm.
when he says something like, instead of Hollywood homicide, mm-hmm. he says Hollywood homicide,
mm-hmm.
and Elroy makes a lot of use of stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
so...
Yeah, like, I remember a few things that stood out when you're doing that kind of narration was using, what's the word, sound words for it, like flash, bang...
And oh, then, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was also, like, instead of saying, you see something, you would say, dig this guy, or check this out, or...
Yeah, dig was used a lot by Elroy. It's like the slang.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dig, the slur.
Yeah, like,
dig the da-da-da's on the wall.
Yeah,
dig
yeah.
this, you know.
The broken-down surly bar.
Yeah. So I used that a lot, but how'd you find that?
It really worked to kind of obviously bring you into the kind of the setting, and I was wondering how you were going to do like a narration style, because obviously I hadn't read James Elroy before, so it was a little bit tough to get into, but once you did, I thought it worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like we said, it was a short game.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, like, yeah, it was good that it was short because of the slurs and language, but it was a little bit unfortunate that it was short because you needed to play it for a slightly longer time to get a payoff.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had words linked to mechanics. So when you said, like, vibe, that means, like, we could make a perception roll. Or when you said, like, dig... You had keyed some words to
yeah.
Mechanics.
After the first session, Chris had provided some feedback that, or I think it came from Chris. I believe, but it kind of were yeah. So the way the characters talk was in era,
mm-hmm.
and the kind of the descriptors. Even when I would describe a character, I would try to do it in a like a kind of hard boiled or James Elroy style.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying certain eyes, you know, he has come in the eyes, you know. Making allusions that maybe this guy is also closeted
mm-hmm.
as well. But then I would go roll perception.
Mm-hmm.
so I would use just regular words for the mechanics, and it was kind of it was a little bit jarring for you guys.
Yeah.
So then, yeah. So in the the follow up session started to use dig this, you know,
yeah,
dig the room or vibe or something.
Mm.
Like, you know, vibe would be more, a more general role. You decide what it is,
mm-hmm.
but I'm giving you the opportunity to make some sort of role. Where dig would be kind of to make a perception role.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think that helped to it because it brought us into the story more. But on the other hand, there was one weak side to it in that when you were using the narration voice, you used kind of like that, kind of like almost a jivey kind of way of talking about it, similar to like the NPCs would talk. The only problem was that often then when the NPCs started talking, I wasn't sure if it was NPC speaking or the GM speaking.
Yeah,
that happened a few times.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, I didn't anticipate that, so then I had like a big bruiser of a mobster. And he spoke in a deeper voice, but his sidekick spoke in my voice.
Yeah.
So
don't you mean the other way around, since you're giant?
Yeah.
You used your normal voice for the big guy.
Oh, yeah.
You had to raise your voice for the small guy.
They can hear my voice.
Uh-huh.
I can't lie about that.
Lyle's 10 feet tall, but he sounds like he's 3 feet tall.
I don't know what you would have done to differentiate the narrator from the characters. Chris, I think you had suggested like a hand sign or something.
What about just using like a little like flash or what they used in LA Confidential when Danny DeVito's kind of given his kind of chorus or his narration?
Hepcats,
and then do the narration.
That's great if you're going from the NPC to the narration. But if you're going from the narration to the NPC, they're not going to come up, walk into the room and say, Flash, how are you?
Yeah, I don't know what you would...
Back to the story.
That would work. So I think...
Kind of bookend, if I could figure out... Yeah, to basically bookend the narration, but...
Yeah.
I think it's easy. Like, I agree, Chris. It's easy to do the first part, the first bookend, but what would be... The second one. Maybe go back, look at LA Confidential and see... hush, hush. You know, he uses like, and everything's hush, hush.
Hush, yeah.
If something appropriate, because obviously I can't just, and everything's hush, hush, and then go back.
You know,
and,
you could use it, since you're basing it a lot on literature, you could use a very literal style. Like, say the sentence and then say full stop, or exclamation point, question mark.
That could work.
You know, give punctuation. Or you could say something like, reserve, check it out for going back into the scene. Or actually, that's not a bad idea. Use something like those words, like flash, describe the scene, and then check it out. Here we go.
Yeah. All right. Well, now I think we got that.
Yeah.
Give it a shot.
You could even do that in almost anything, because sometimes in your fantasy campaign, Chris, it was a little bit, not as often, but it was a little bit hard to determine when kind of, you know, NPC stopped talking and narration began again. So,
yeah, especially because I'm nowhere near as good as Lyle is dressing up my NPC voices. But,
but I think, like, story could, or any narration, so long as you choose sort of bookend phrases, you could do that.
I think it would be harder for fantasy in that Hardboiled has a particular style, and from my limited experience with Hardboiled, the style is as important...
Right.
As what it's saying. You know, mm-hmm. it's very much like kind of the medium is the message. And the style is it.
Yeah.
Everything else is just, you know, people are going to get killed and people are doing bad things.
Right.
And there's some kind of twist. But it's all about style. Whereas fantasy, I think it's less so. Or the style is very, if you take the Tolkien, it's very ornate or long.
So in other words, you have a very long bookend.
Yeah, you just pause for a minute between everything.
In the year. Oh, wow, that's fascinating.
Let's sing a song.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Now we'll close with a song.
So,
perhaps a poem I've written. Oh,
could be, but no, but I agree. Like, maybe the description should be something very...
connected to the story or theme?
Very literal, literal in the sense, like, from the literature. But I wouldn't know how you would bookend that. Using fantasy, because I'm not sure that they have a particular style necessarily to book in.
I don't know.
If you are using a literary style that you're based on, there might be something you could find, but if you're not, I think you suggested before, Chris, like a hand sign.
Yeah, I guess maybe read some Robert E. Howard and see what he does for Conan.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
But because it's very pulpy style.
Mm-hmm.
Off the top of my head, I can't think of
particularly
what he does, but he has a very quick style.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I mean, it's almost like the hard boil of fantasy. It's just like a very...
You know,
comes at
you. Interestingly, you could probably use, like we said, a visual thing would be really easy to do. Just hold up a hand or put out a card or something when you're
when
there.
When you're using photos.
A recorder.
Actually, that's actually what I was thinking of, is not pulling out a recorder, but music. Because if you know what you're going to say, if you have like some quote-unquote box text or something, you could find music that matches it. Just stick it on your computer behind you and click play and stop.
I've found it very difficult to tie in music to a game session.
No, but that's also because you planned on pausing the game section there and listening to the music.
No,
and then
not,
you just kind of set around.
Chris, are you saying taking some background music, but you have the same background music for the description style?
Yes.
Or just... Yeah, maybe. Have you seen the cartoon Lord of the Rings?
Yes, by Bakshi. Too long ago to remember.
Okay, because they have Bilbo Baggins, and he's kind of...
Bagging?
Baggins?
Baggins. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I'm banging you out on that. Ba-dum-bum. Go on. That way we both sound as bad. No, I sound worse. Please continue.
Bilbo is, I think he's telling some elven story, and the elves are playing a little background music.
I actually remember that scene, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe something like that.
Mm. Yeah, whenever Gandalf went in and told stories about it, they like cut off and they had the dwarves singing. Oh, the mountains. Mm. I'm going to stop now.
Yeah.
I could do that.
Flashing fingers.
Or flashing fingers.
Jazz hands. But anyway.
So that was experiment number two, mm-hmm. was the kind of the having the narrative, having the hard-boil style mm-hmm. dictate what style you're doing for the narrative, which I would say as a storyteller was very... It was very fun when you planned out certain scenes, mm-hmm. but then when you guys would do new stuff, it was hard to...
Yeah.
You'd have to think of that on the fly, and that was real tough.
I imagine.
So you kept going to saying the same things over and over. But I remember, because I had written out the first one
mm-hmm.
and used kind of Elroy's style of, you know, the flashbulbs go pop, 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 mm-hmm. the sweat goes pop, pop, pop,
mm-hmm.
and all that stuff, and then... After that, you become a lot less creative.
It's like, no. Do it again like you did at the beginning. Like, yeah. Oh, stop going off track, god damn it.
The bathroom lights go pop, pop, pop.
Go splash, splash, splash. Does it? Is it a flashing light? No.
I thought it would be a popping light. More strobe.
So the first experiment, was kind of pushing the envelope of what mm-hmm. language you use, plus like keeping the language very in era.
Mm-hmm.
The second one was... using the hard-boil style to be the narrative style.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the third was using the metagame to try to make the metagame work for the game.
Mm-hmm.
And in that is, I had used things like JFK, Lee Harvey Oswald introduced these characters in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the idea was that you guys were supposed to set up JFK and take some photos that would discredit him. Basically him in bed with a African-American prostitute, underage prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the reason, Wayne's character had connections to JFK. He was kind of like the Frank Sinatra.
Mm-hmm.
So he would set up JFK with women, and JFK kind of liked the women that Wayne's character... God, what
the heck
was
his name?
I'm drawing a blank. Anyway.
I forget. I actually have the character sheet somewhere. I forget.
Let's call him John.
Wasn't John.
Okay.
Anyway, he liked the women that Wayne's
John
character
set him up with. I'm sorry.
That John set him up with because they didn't come manhandled.
Because
obviously he didn't care for women.
Yeah.
And Bernie was the expert at planting bugs mm-hmm. and taking those
CD pictures.
Those photos that people don't want taken.
Mm-hmm.
And Lee Harvey Oswald was kind of the mafia set it up,
mm-hmm.
but Lee Harvey Oswald was kind of like your handler.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the month before Dallas.
And actually, that's something I wanted to ask you about, is when we played the game, like I rolled a really good perception or knowledge roll or something like that,
yeah.
and that's how it got revealed that it was Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah.
If I hadn't made that roll, how were you planning to...
His wife.
Okay.
So you were in that bar and the wife came, and then she would have had the family name. You would have connected with his first name and everything, and she might have just
blurted
some stuff. I didn't know how much she knew about Lee Harvey Oswald, so...
You actually knew very
character or player? Or both?
The real person?
The history of as a character or as a
No, because I'm using the metagame, you as people, as Chris and Wayne, how much do you guys personally know about Lee Harvey Oswald's history?
I heard that he killed somebody once. But seriously, that was about the gist of it.
And the idea was kind of, you know, the main characters in a hard-boiled story, they kind of get that feeling that something's not right, or this is hanky and things like that. So I was trying to make the metagame going, you know, this is the month before JFK gets killed in Dallas, and we're kind of setting something up, and there's a conspiracy theory with the mob being involved in his assassination, and now we've got Lee Harvey Oswald who's involved with the assassination or killed JFK. And again, it's a month before he's supposed to die in Dallas, and what are we doing?
I didn't put the timing thing together.
Oh, okay.
I just didn't remember when JFK died.
No.
Because I didn't remember when he died, but I don't remember what month we started playing.
Okay.
Like our character. Sorry. Right. So I didn't put the timing
bring it up
thing
too. Yeah, I don't think I really paid attention to the date either.
But I was definitely, as a player, I'm like, okay, something is going on when we're introduced to this guy named, you know, Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of like, oh, all right. And you didn't say beforehand what the experiment was, because you just kind of wanted to see what we would do. And it's very difficult to talk when you have that face.
Sorry. Sorry, my foot just cramped up.
But
look at Chris.
I'm trying.
Don't look at me.
Lyle's feigning screaming right now.
Silence. All right. So, anyway, it was difficult to... No, it wasn't difficult. Sorry. It was... Yeah, you did have this feeling that something was off or something was wrong, but then, like you said, using the metagame to work to your advantage as a player, you're not kind of sure, does my character know this? Obviously, it hasn't happened yet. You know, would my character think this guy is suspicious?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as you said afterwards, it kind of really created this, as you would say, hinky feeling that, like, you're not supposed to know, you know, what's going on, but you don't, because pretty much immediately...
Does hinky mean uneasy?
Yeah, or strange, or whatever.
Cool.
Like, pretty much immediately when we walked into the bar and met this guy, like, alarm bells started going off in my head. I'm like, I don't like this guy.
Yeah, you played him as a real creep. It was a great NPC.
Yeah, it was that you played him as a creep. It was
I played him as Gary Oldman's characterization of Lee Harvey Oswald in the JFK movie.
And
I gave him a bit more OCD.
Okay.
Mm. Obsessive compulsive disorder. So I was like always rearranging stuff in front of me.
Mm-hmm. I think meanwhile at the time I was rearranging my skills.
So you're probably thinking, why is Lyle making fun of me?
Clash of OCDs.
But yeah, I thought it worked really well, and I think it is a great tool for making the characters feel uncomfortable, but not really giving them a reason why.
Yeah, I think by this...
And that's why I didn't tell you that I was using that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was saying before the episode, oh, we're going to talk about three things, and you're like, three?
Three?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Didn't you notice? And I kept saying, what did you think
the
third one?
Third one was?
And like, I don't know.
And secretly
we're
like, yeah!
I don't know,
timing. They didn't get it.
Yeah, definitely tried to... Yeah, I was hoping it's kind of like feeling trapped, like, oh, I don't know if I'm supposed to do this, but definitely we're not doing something right. Or this is, are we really just setting this guy up? Mm-hmm. Are we really going to take pictures? And what happened was, it turns out you weren't only there to take pictures. You just basically put JFK in a position. And I had you the night before you were involved in like setting up the underage prostitute and then beating up the pimp.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the pimp was kind of in on part of the deal, and he was going to come in and kill Kennedy, and you guys were going to capture that. And it was kind of the double thing of both Kennedy died, but he doesn't die a martyr, because he's killed by some pimp, because he's with this underage prostitute, and you guys have the pictures. So that was kind of what the plan was, and then, but I, you know, you guys aren't in on the whole plan, you're not in on the killing, and it's like, oh, are you guys really going to survive this?
It's on a need-to-know basis.
Yeah. And what would, how would you guys react? And you guys, and I thought that was very hard-boiled. It's like, you're not good people. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily.
We're
actually, Wayne,
not
Wayne,
bad people.
Yeah, you, actually, Wayne, your character wasn't a bad person.
He was kind of bad.
Yeah, Bernie was, Chris' character was actually kind of, like, not a good person.
Mm-hmm.
But you're there. You're in that situation. Are you going to just let this guy die?
Mm-hmm.
There could be self-preservation. Now, Wayne's character is very much about self-preservation because he's closeted. He'll do whatever to keep that a secret. But is he going to watch the President of the United States get shot?
Right.
And not only that, but take pictures so people know what the situation was. You know, this guy's not a martyr.
Right.
You know, this guy is someone who will sleep with... And of course, you know, because of the times, the ratio, you know, this is when him being a Roman Catholic was a big deal.
Right, right.
So. And then you guys decided to save his life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I figured, like, I figured Bernie's not a nice guy, but, you know, he's not going to stand by while somebody gets killed. And we had, having taken a bunch of pictures already, me and Lee Harvey Oswald were in the closet taking pictures of the scene. So, you know, I burst out of the closet with the camera. It's kind of like, hey, smile, how's it going?
Mm.
So I figured, like, even though I'm a Danny DeVito character, I'm only like 5'1" or something like that, I still had a position of power with the camera there.
I think it was almost a little bit of some influence, of like, maybe opportunity for my character, and that, yeah, like Chris said, I wasn't going to stand around while someone got killed, especially like the president.
Mm-hmm.
But then after the pimp got killed and...
Oswald
killed the pimp, and then Oswald put the gun in Kennedy's hand.
Yeah, you guys played that real well in that you played it very fast. Like, your actions were really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Oswald is not the mastermind.
Mm-hmm.
He's just
quite the opposite.
Yeah. So, yeah, I figured that you guys had accelerated the decision-making process beyond what Oswald was capable of.
Mm-hmm.
So he was going to try to stick to the plan where Kennedy gets killed, or, barring that, try to set it up where...
It looks like Kennedy killed the pimp.
Kennedy killed the pimp somehow.
Yeah.
And so he put the gun, and he didn't kind of do the math that now there's two guns in the room.
Oh, this one, Wayne's character tackled the pimp got his gun before.
And I got the pimp.
So there's two guns in the room, and he just put one gun in Kennedy's hand, and Wayne's character had the other gun. So,
and all of a sudden, like the
all of a sudden, he no longer had control of the situation.
Exactly, and I kind of took advantage of that and said, "No, we're done."
Mm-hmm.
And
rescue the pimp.
Get the pimp out of here.
Get the pimp out of the room.
I thought it was like you said, you're kind of making quick decisions, and sometimes you don't think very clearly in those situations. And
we forgot to say that in order to get Kennedy in that situation, you had to
drug him,
get him really drunk, and then that didn't work. So you had to drug him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he's kind of like knocked out,
the unconscious president,
and
naked with an underage prostitute.
Yeah.
There's blood all over the floor. You're like, quick, get out the corpse.
Just leave the president here in a room filled with blood.
Yeah, like I said.
And a gun in his hand.
Like I said, snap decision. You kind of don't think very clearly. But
it turned out...
We didn't do that in the end.
All right.
So you took the president out, but you actually foiled the mafia's plan. So basically, I think you both realize that you're in a bit of trouble.
Yeah.
So what to do? And Wayne decided that his guy was going to go on the run.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris actually really surprised me. And you...
I figured I had the pictures, so make a bunch of copies, and they can't come after me because I had proof that there was an assassination attempt.
Yeah.
And I had the recordings as well, so I could put everything together.
Yeah, because you had bugged, for example, Wayne's apartment, and Wayne didn't know about that. Yeah. Oh, no, you did know.
No, I specifically asked for that to happen.
So that you were able to get some conversations between him and this mafia guy that was in love with him.
So I went straight to the authorities and figured I could get protection out of that.
Yeah, and then you were put into... We had a little epilogue, and in the epilogue...
Which was awesome. So awesome.
The epilogue, Wayne's character's on the run, and he hears the radio of Kennedy got assassinated in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And he's like, oh. And you had said to me, though, at one point, Chris, you're like, oh, I wonder if this conspiracy goes where it's even including, like, you know, the government and law enforcement. And it hadn't at the time. I was just doing, the mob killed Kennedy. And I'm like, oh, now.
now it does. Thanks.
Now the government killed him, too.
Yeah.
So you basically, you were listening to the radio or watching TV about the Kennedy gets killed. And it was kind of like the television goes click. The gun goes click, and then it goes bang.
Yeah.
Pop, pop, pop.
So, boom, your boom, character didn't survive.
Brains. Yeah. Which is just awesome. I think it's probably one of the best endings a character of mine has had, so it was cool.
I doubt my character survived for very long, because the main reason I just ran is because I figured the mob wasn't done with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, you screw over the mob's plans, and they're not going to be very happy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're not guys who tend to forget.
Yeah, you know? And you didn't really have the most forgettable face either.
No.
Yeah, you're famous. But, all right. Yeah. So that was our hard-boiled game. So,
talking about the metagame part of it, how did it go for you? Like, what did you think of it?
I thought it was okay. I probably didn't get a lot of, like, Oswald.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe because the dates weren't kind
also,
of.
I felt that like I wanted to go holy crap, but also I didn't. Wayne's character didn't know yet, or I don't know if you'd put it together in your head or not, but the character didn't know. So I just said, folded up the note and then was quiet. But that definitely worked.
Yeah,
but I don't know, like the. I think it's. I think we stumbled on something really useful here, because you remember the horror game I ran.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. And there was like a concentration camp kind of thing with a whole bunch of dead Jews in. I think, wow, there's a lot of Jews in my games, and they all came alive as zombies and stuff. Right. But of course, the players, the characters you were playing, wouldn't have known anything about the Holocaust. So I don't know, how did that work for you?
Well, I think I actually said it in the session when I was like, oh, nice, because that makes
not nice as in the Holocaust, but...
Nice.
Oh, God.
I'm just going to stand at the window there for a few minutes.
Yeah. If only Schindler's List had a this.
But
it was a nice use of the meta game, or nice use of using something the players knew to create a sense of like unease or trepidation.
It made a situation... more disturbing.
Yeah,
where I would contrast the zombies with the werewolf, or even the golem that was earlier in the game, and the zombies were more disturbing because of that Holocaust metagame thing. Because our characters wouldn't know it. They were like, oh,
they're just zombies.
Well, even if we just figured out that, I'm not even sure we knew they were. Did we know they were Jewish?
I don't see how we would have.
Or we didn't. No, we might not have known they were exclusively Jewish.
You wouldn't have known, but it was. You were going down a hallway that had windows in it, and you could see into shower rooms, and there were piles of bodies in
there.
We wouldn't have known
that they were Jewish.
They were Jewish.
You were there on a mission. Well, not from the rabbi, but you heard from that one rabbi that they had rounded up all the Jews in that village.
Yeah.
So.
For that, it was mostly metagame that added to that.
But I'm thinking, like, between the things that we did in there, like using candles and darkness to try and get the players more into it, that was less effective than the metagame. And I think the same goes for your hard-boiled campaign, is that the metagame really can work to affect the players a lot. It's very, very useful.
Yeah, normally the metagame is generally seen as, like, a bad thing, but there are ways you can
use it. Yeah, because there's no avoiding that, I know this. You know, maybe your character, it's really hard to separate that. And a lot of people say, I'm really good at playing that where my character knows this information, but I know this information. Right. You know, my character doesn't know that, so I won't act on it. Mm-hmm. And maybe people are really good about not acting on it or not sharing that knowledge or information with people.
Yeah.
But they still have that in the back of their mind at all times. And it's the same with like these zombies and you're mowing them down. You're instantly thinking of the images that you've seen of the emaciated the people in the concentration camps who look like corpses, and they're not. And just imagine that these people are shambling as zombies, and it made it that much more terrifying or unsettling.
Yeah.
Whereas the werewolf, I mean, you could be thinking back to American Werewolf in London. Mm-hmm. You could even be thinking to that video game Darkstalkers, where it has that werewolf guy, you know, fighting.
You're thinking of Altered Beast? Why is Bob Yagway?
Or American Werewolf in Washington.
Or
the Werewolf of Washington.
Dean Stockwell is racing towards you.
Yeah, exactly. Is there a phone booth anywhere around? I'll be safe.
I closed the door.
It's like, ooh, yeah, Dean Stockwell's chasing you. I run, because he can't catch me.
Yeah. I punch him in the face. maybe break his nose. Anyway, yeah.
So, yeah.
But that was...
No, it is surprising, like, how well the metagame can
go. And, like, it really, in the hard-boiled game, it really added a new level. Because I knew JFK was coming to town, but as soon as the name Lee Harvey Oswald came out, it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, you got it for the role, but maybe you said Lee.
Maybe I was slow when I made the perception roll and I figured out who it was. Maybe I was just slow in catching on to the plot, but when I did, I was, whoa, cool.
Yeah, because then you're like, maybe this isn't just
taking
pictures. Mm-hmm. Because this guy did more than just take pictures, or maybe Oswald didn't take any pictures. Yeah. He was there to shoot somebody, and he knew he had a gun.
I didn't even think of JFK in the whole assassination sense. I thought that he was just part of the time period that we were being put in,
I just one thing we didn't mention about the hardboiled game is kind of like we talk about railroad games or ball of twine games, and I think in hardboiled you kind of have to make that first session very much a railroad or very much a ball of twine, because you got to trap your players and you got to put them in a situation that they don't want to be in, because I think that's hardboiled.
Yeah, that's
and then you just kind of like
the genre.
And then that train is going to stop at different stations. Mm-hmm. And whether or not the players kind of escape, like when the train stops, they jump off the train and go and do their thing. And you guys did that a couple times. And then you guys kind of got back on the train and it kept going. And then at the end, you were just like,
Fuck this train.
Yeah, F it. Like, and then
I'm tired of these motherfucking gangsters on this motherfucking train.
I ain't getting back on this train.
Yeah. Well, I think we brought that up during the Twine versus Sandbox campaign or podcast. That an alternate style is to have like sandboxes, so where there's kind of smaller areas where players have freedom to play, but it's along one string of events. And I think that's very specific to this kind of genre. Yeah. Often the main characters don't have control of their fate.
Well, it was also because there was kind of like a timeline involved, right?
Absolutely.
Like the plan was kind of laid out for us, laid out for our characters. So it's like, okay, this is when Kennedy is coming to town. This is when you have to do this thing. Mm-hmm. You have a little bit of time before all that happens. You have a couple days to like plan stuff out and do things. So yeah, it was kind of, you know, like a ball of twine at first, in that, you know, we get grabbed and we get set up and this has to happen. And then it becomes a sandbox where we're kind of allowed to do anything we want. And then it goes back into a ball of twine where, yep, we've hit the point where the events keep moving. And you're either on the train or you're probably dead.
Yeah, that's something that I'm wondering about. Like the time, having that kind of schedule is a very good way of controlling that part of the game, especially when you have something like "we're going to freaking kill you" to hang over the players' heads. But that's what I'm planning for our upcoming campaign, is something similar to that structure, the sandboxes or the stations along the thing. But I don't have a timeline for it, so I'm wondering how it's going to work.
Yeah, I don't know. This is a bit of a tangent, but you're talking about a fantasy game. Mm-hmm. Are you going to make up months? Like, this is...
You know, actually, for...
This is Peller's... Pellerberg?
Pellerberg, that sounds like a city.
Pellowary. Month.
Pellowary. You know, I actually had... thought to do that even in the first part of it, to make up like different days of the week and stuff, but we never really got to the point where counting days was that important.
Well, that being said, and again this is kind of on the tangent, I think having days, or at least having like weeks or something, makes it feel like time is passing. Mm-hmm. Like it almost felt before like there was kind of no difference from one day to the next. Mm-hmm. So sorry if that sounds...
One game to the next.
No, there's no... Like, sorry. I mean, like, in the campaign, it's like, and you go to sleep and you wake up. Mm-hmm. And do something, go to sleep and wake up. And, I mean, it didn't feel like time was really passing. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, even if you just have something like, and today is, you know, Peller's Feast Day. Or...
Moon Day.
Maybe you have to tie it... Because it is kind of tough, because when you start, you drop, it's Wednesday, it's Thursday.
Yeah, that's pretty...
Then just talking about like the hard boiled using the like the in-era slang,
yeah.
is like, yeah, that's not in that fantasy world because they don't have a Thursday or a Friday.
Right.
But then if you go, it's Rotten Day, mm-hmm. and somebody's like, oh, is that before or after Momo's Day? I can't even think of days.
You know, actually, what I think I might do is just take the Japanese days. For those who don't know, Japanese days have like that, like Monday is Moon Day,
right.
Tuesday is Fire Day, Wednesday is Water Day. That would actually might be a way to do it, because then...
But do it in English?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Or like, I'm thinking even if you do like...
Saturday, Dirt Day.
Yeah, really. Or even if you do like...
Earth Day.
How good tree?
Arbor's Day. Yeah. Oh yeah, that's Thursday.
Yeah.
Tree Day.
Oh, except for Sunday.
Sunday is Sunday. Yeah. And Monday, Moon Day.
Yeah.
Or
I was just thinking it's 3 days before the Feast of Pillar. Mm-hmm. Or like it's 2 days
before this. So the idea is like to tie it to events.
Kind of, yeah, tie it to events.
Well, I actually didn't have that in the first one. There was specific events time, but...
But events that we knew about as players and characters. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to keep the plot of the bad guy secret. That's mm-hmm. fine. I came off as really harsh again.
A little bit.
Sorry. I'll play after the cast.
Events we know about.
Sorry, I'll just be quiet now.
And Chris is just nodding. Yes. Okay. Yes, events that you know.
I'm sorry.
I'll stop now before we start busting out with some of those slurs.
Well, that was kind of funny how you ended the hard-boiled. It was like, goodbye, slur. Yeah. Goodbye, slur. Yeah. Slur. Yeah. Slur. There you were, just throwing them around.
It was actually quite a touching moment. I thought that hard-boiled ended really well. It was very Casablanca.
It's very unsentimental, but very appropriate.
Exactly. It felt like a noir film ending.
It's like you guys work together for a couple days. You're not friends forever.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's
it.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us again for another episode. Check us out online, www.idlereadhands.com, idleredhands.com. Mm-hmm. Sign up on the forums, unless you're a spam bot.
Yeah, don't sign up then.
Check us out on Facebook page, like us there, and send us an email, info@idleredhands.com, and all that other good stuff.
All right.
Take care.
Later. Bye, Slur.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.